Church, definitely.
Sri Yuta. Father, come along. Sri Guru. Vaishnavamsa. Sri Sagrajata Sagana Raghunatha Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Harijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshacharine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Thank you. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Pariprajna Kacharya Stotra Sutasi Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Pariprajna Kacharya Stotra Satasri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem se kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Dham Ki Jai. Jamuna Mai Ki Jai. Ganga Mai Ki Jai. Tulsi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Itai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Glory to Sri Prabhupada.
Do you have any decoration?
Yeah.
Hare Krishna. So it is a great pleasure and honor and privilege to be with all of you again in this beautiful temple. Tonight we will discuss two very important topics. How to be successful in Krishna consciousness and how to fail in Krishna consciousness. Now, how many of you want to be successful in Krishna consciousness? And how many of you act in ways that may not be favorable for your success in Krishna consciousness? Yes. So we need we need to develop faith, ado shraddha. We need to develop faith that by becoming Krishna conscious, all of our needs will be met, all of our desires will be fulfilled. And therefore we should be very eager to know how we can be successful. And what we should avoid that will cause us to be less successful or unsuccessful. So the basis of tonight's discussion will be the Nectar of Instruction. It is a small book written by Srila Rupa Goswami and translated by Srila Prabhupada. And to help us go deeper in the Nectar of Instruction, we will also refer to Sri Bhakti Loka. As I mentioned in the morning, Srila Rupa Goswami mentions six items that assure the complete success of devotional service. Sadbhi Bhakti Prasidyati. And he also mentions six items that will spoil or ruin our devotional service. Sadbhi Bhakti Vinashyati. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his wisdom and compassion, wrote 12 essays, one on each of the six items that assure our success in Krishna consciousness, and one essay for each of the six items that will spoil our Krishna consciousness. So one of the items that is favorable for devotional service is dharyat. Utsaha nishchaya dharyat. Who knows what dharyat means? Yes? Patience. Yes, patience. So we'll read what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says and discuss. For the practitioner of devotional service, dharya, patience, is extremely necessary. It is, I just read it. For the practitioner of devotional service, dharya, patience, is? Yes. So is paying attention. Those who possess the quality of dharya are called dhira, sober. Due to lack of this quality, men become restless. Those who are impatient cannot do any work. Now, what does this mean? Those who are impatient cannot do any work. There are many people who drive to work and get stuck in traffic, and they become impatient. But they still go to work, and they can do work. So, When Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that those who are impatient cannot do any work, it doesn't mean material work. It means the internal work that we have to do as sadhakas or practitioners. In fact, Sri Bhakti Loka is specifically addressed to sadhakas or practitioners. So without the quality of patience, we cannot do any internal work, real work, internal work. Because we'll be too impatient, we'll be too restless, we won't want to see the process through. By the quality of Darya, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. So this sentence also can use some explanation. One of our acharyas, one of the six Goswamis, Raghunath Das Goswami, was born the only son of two very wealthy brothers, Hiranya Majumdar and Govardhan Majumdar. And their income then was, you know, equal to millions of dollars. Monthly income then was equal to millions of dollars today. And, you know, they placed all their hopes on Raghunath Das. So they were pious. It is said that practically the whole Brahmin community of Bengal was being maintained by their generosity. And they had as a family priest or guru, Yadunandan Acharya, and also Balaram Acharya. Yadunandan Acharya was a disciple of Advaita Acharya. So they would organize gatherings, satsangs with Haridas Thakur, and you know they. So Haridas Thakur was staying nearby as a guest of Balaram Acharya, and Govardhan and Hiranya thought that we should send our boy, who was just a young boy, Raghunath, to Haridas Thakur to get blessings. And many people want blessings. It's just an observation. I can give a class on pure devotional service, afterwards people will come up and say they want blessings. What blessing? I'm looking for an apartment, or you know, I have a pain in my left toe. So generally, people's idea of blessings means some material reward or benefit. So Govardhan and Hiranya were exceedingly wealthy, and so they loaded up wagons with valuable gifts for Haridas Thakur. And they were thinking that if we give him all these valuable presentations, he'll give a really good blessing to our son. Because Atmavan Manyate Jagate, they were thinking in their mentality that he would respond to their material offerings. But Haridas Thakur, of course, had no interest in such gifts. or in giving material blessings. So Govardhan and Hiranyaksha, many like guards and employees, servants to accompany Raghunath, and they gave all the gifts and wanted a blessing. So Haridas Thakur said, I will give you a blessing. Now Balaramacharya knew the nature of Haridas Thakur, that he would not give any material blessing. In fact, to the contrary. And so he didn't want Govardhan and Hiranya to be disappointed. So when Haridas Thakur was just about to pronounce the blessing, he made a loud noise. So no one could hear the blessing. So, okay, everything went well. And so Raghunath and all the guards and servants went back, and Govardhan and Hiranya were very eager to know. So did Haridas Thakur give a blessing? Did he give my son a blessing? And they said, I think so. Well, what was the blessing? What was the blessing? And they said, well, I don't know what the blessing was. Somehow I couldn't hear it. So Balaramacharya, of course, is very intelligent. So he said the blessing was that your son, Raghunath, will control the whole world. And they were so happy. They were thinking, we just control this little tract in Bengal, and we're so wealthy, and he's going to control the whole world. We can't even imagine how wealthy he'll be. Now, this statement that he would control the world is not really untrue, although that was not exactly the blessing. The blessing was that he would have nothing to do with the material world. But the thing is that if you have no attachment to the material world, the material world cannot control you. Nothing in the material world can control you. And so ultimately you are in control. So this statement of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is that one who is dhira, who can control these six urges, can control first himself and then the world, is true in the sense that the world or the things of the world cannot control him or her. And therefore, he can engage everything in the world in the service of the Lord. And that is the meaning of the verse, dhira. By the quality of Darya, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. In the first verse of Sri Upadeshamrita, the symptoms of Darya are explained. If you know, you can join me. Vacho vegam manasa krodha vegam jiva vegam udaropasta vegam etan vegam yovisaheta dira sarvam apimam prithivim sasishyat. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So a sober person, dhīra, viśeṣaḥ dhīra, and he can make disciples all over the world because he won't be under the control of the demands of his body, he won't be under the control of anything of the world. And therefore, he can help his disciples. If someone wants to, you know, exploit someone for his own benefit, you know, gross or subtle sense gratification, how can he really think of the welfare of the person? But someone who's in control of himself and dhīra, sober, without, you know, being influenced by material things, he can actually be a genuine well-wisher and friend. There are six types of urges, namely the urges of speech, mind, anger, belly, tongue, and genitals. But the first is vacho-vega, which is speech. If speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. Now this happens. You know, we'll say something bad about someone, and we may tell a confidential friend, you know, I'm telling you, but don't tell anyone else. But, dot, 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 and all the things about the person. So that confidential friend thinks, well, I was that person's confidential friend who told me, so I also have my confidential friend, so I can tell my confidential friend, dot, dot, dot. Then the second confidential friend, well, she told me because I'm her confidential friend, so let me tell my confidential friend. And eventually it can get back to the person. And so enmity arises. And there are layers of enmity because it may get back to the first person. And then he'll think, who squealed? I told him not to tell anyone. So then there's another layer of enmity. And it goes on and on and on. And there's a psychology, if you think about it, there's a psychology involved in speaking about others. And generally the psychology is that we want to make ourselves look better by making others look worse. There can be more also, because quite often that the confidential information might have been shared with you by the person you're talking about. So you're sort of like advertising the fact that, you know, you're a confidential friend of that person, and that person confided in you about his problems or her problems. And anyway, it just goes on and on. But this is the basic principle. If speech is unregulated, it creates enmity. If speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. To speak uselessly is the business of a fool. But out of a desire to unnecessarily engage in speech, the materialists always waste time and face so many distresses. Pious people observe monavrata, or silence, in order to get rid of this disturbance. Monavrata means they don't speak. But as Srila Prabhupada has pointed out, and I've actually seen, people who are observing monavrata, they'll carry like a tablet. Well, in those days, what I meant was like a chalk tablet. Now I guess there's other kinds of tablets. And, you know, like they don't speak, but their mind is working. You know, their mind is working. And you can speak to them, and then they'll write the answer on the tablet. So they're not really silent. So being silent is really not practical. The real options are whether we speak in a way that's favorable for devotional service, for our well-being and the well-being of others, or which is unfavorable. So practitioners of devotional service should not speak unnecessarily. Besides topics regarding Krishna, all other topics are unnecessary. But to speak about subjects favorable to devotional service is not unnecessary. Therefore, devotees should speak only on topics about Lord Hari, or those favorable to such topics. All other topics will be counted in the category of the urge to speak. One who is able to control the urge to speak is a sober person. So this is positive. We should have patience. We should work on ourselves. And we should, you know, work on ourselves means to control these six urges, tolerate them or control them. And there's another meaning to Darya, which we'll come back to. But on the subject of controlling the urge to speak, in the six items that spoil devotional service, one relates to speech. And who can say what that one is? Prajalpa. Who knows what prajalpa is? If you don't know it by name, you know it by species. Probably, unfortunately. So, prajalpa. Now, there are different categories of prajalpa, but we're going to focus on one that is very relevant to us in particular, and that is talking about other people. And that Bhaktivinoda, of all the things he could have said about controlling the urge to speak, That was the one he mentioned, that by uncontrolled, by speech that, which is not regulated and materializes. Talking without reason about other people is extremely adverse to devotional service. What does adverse mean?
Unfavorable.
Yeah, unfavorable, contrary. Many people talk about others to establish their own reputation. Being envious, some people are accustomed to discuss others' character. So we're actually, we're here in the material world because of envy of Krishna. And that envy extends to everyone else. We come into the material world really with the desire to be Krishna, or to take the place of Krishna. And every conditioned soul has that underlying mentality that he wants to be Krishna. So we're living in a world that is inhabited by people who are all trying to take the place of Krishna. So they're like competitors of God. And they're competitors of each other who are competitors of God. Our God brother Bhurijan Prabhu says that it's like every one of us is going around, and within us, of course we won't say it, but within us, what we really want to say is, excuse me, I have an important announcement to make. I am the center of the universe, and everyone should do just what I want for my pleasure and satisfaction. So everyone is walking around with that mentality. And so what will be the situation? It's like everyone is competing. Another example is that we each envision life as a drama in which we are the hero or the heroine. And we want everyone else to be the supporting cast to make us, you know, glorious and successful as the hero or heroine. And if someone doesn't act the way we want, we get upset. You're not playing your part properly. You know, I'm the hero. You're supposed to be supporting me. And so we have all these heroes and heroines upset with the supporting cast for not playing their roles properly. So it's quite a situation. So being envious, some people are accustomed to discuss others' character. Yeah, we think by putting them down, we'll look better, and we're just envious of them. We think we should get all the glory, we should have all the facility, whatever. The minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. Talking about others should be rejected in all respects. I'll read it again. The minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. When we chant in particular, well, I mean, whatever we do, but say when we chant in particular, we're trying to fix our mind on the lotus feet of Krishna in the form of the holy name. And if we've been engaged in talking about others, that will affect our chanting. we can feel it. When we're actually serious about chanting, we can perceive how our mind is affected by speaking about others. And so we really try to avoid it. We really make every effort to avoid it. And there are situations that are awkward where you might wonder, how can I avoid it? But we have techniques. There are ways to avoid it without offending the person who wants to engage you in this type of prajalpa. Talking about others should be respected in all respects. But in the practice of devotional service, there are many favorable topics that are faultless, even though they are about others. What's an example of a faultless topic about others? Yes, glorifying devotees, appreciating devotees. Exactly. The Lord or his devotees. In order to completely renounce talking about others, one needs to live in the forest. The two different types of practicing devotees are the householders and the renunciates. Because the renunciates have no business whatsoever with sense enjoyment, they can give up talking about others in all respects. We'll come back to that. But because a householder is engaged in earning, saving, protecting, and maintaining family members, he cannot completely give up talking about others. And because we are in a preaching movement, it may be that a renunciate has an institution or a project that also involves earning, saving, protecting, and so on. So he may follow the guidelines that are being offered here for householders. Because the householder is engaged in earning, saving, protecting, and maintaining the family, he cannot completely give up talking about others. It is best for him to live in a Krishna-conscious family. When all one's material activities are related with Krishna, then even his unavoidable talk about others becomes sinless and a part of devotional practice in relation to Krishna. He should not talk about others in a way that is detrimental to anyone. He should talk about others only whatever little is necessary in his Krishna conscious family. That can apply to our spiritual family. He should not talk about others without reason. You know, we're so accustomed to speaking casually about others, criticizing others without even thinking about it. So we have to be conscious. The Prabhupada said, first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. So we have to become conscious of this talking about others, and we should not talk about others without reason. So he should not talk about others without reason. In other words, there should be some sort of process between what goes on in our mind and what comes out of our mouth. There should be some filtering process. I mean, at this stage, when our minds are completely filled with Krishna, then, like the gopis, when Uddhava went to meet the gopis in Vrindavan after Krishna had gone to Mathura, the gopis had so many complaints about Krishna. Of course, this was on the highest platform of ecstatic love. But they had so many complaints about Krishna, not only in its present incarnation, but even in previous incarnations. So many misdeeds they perceived in Krishna. So Uddhava said, you know, you're saying Krishna is this, Krishna is that, he's so bad. You know, why do you go on talking about it? And they said, you know, we can live without Krishna. If Krishna can live with us, we can live without him. But we can't live without talking about him. So when our mind is so filled with Krishna that the only thing that can come out of our mouth is Krishna, then we don't need to worry about filtering. But when we have different things in our mind, we should be conscious before we speak and think, is this beneficial for me or others or not? Then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when a guru enlightens his disciple on some topic, then unless he occasionally talks about others, his instruction may not be clear. In the morning we read about Madhavendra Puri's final days and how Ramachandra Puri was an offender and the consequences of his offenses and how Ishwara Puri had faithfully served his spiritual master and the consequences of his behavior. One became a fault finder of Vaishnavas and the other became a lover of God. So the two examples were offered to make the point clear. What happens, you know, yasya prasada, by the mercy of the spiritual master, and yasya prasada, not that you could. So, a guru may occasionally have to speak about others to make the point clear. But we should be sure that if we do speak about others, it's the intention is only for the benefit of all concerned. And that there's no malice or envy or hatred or other things that could be impelling us. When previous Mahajans have talked about others in this way, there is merit in such talk, not fault. And there's different categories, we need not discuss them. But one category is you can talk about a group of people. Like Shukadev Goswami, the most saintly of all saintly persons, he talks about envious householders. They spend their days making money and spending money, and you know, it's, so you can speak about a broad group. You can speak about an individual person without naming the person. Maybe someone would recognize who the person is, or maybe not. But you're speaking about a specific person, but you're not naming him. Or you could even speak about a specific person and name him. These are all different categories. But the ultimate conclusion is that one should not speak about others without reason. And it should be only for the benefit of all concerned. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakura concludes that this is not prajalpa. The practicing devotee normally discusses ancient history and the association of devotees. Occasionally they talk about non-devotees. Such talk is always auspicious and favorable. But those who talk about others while influenced by devotional impediments such as envy, hatred, pride, or distinction are offenders at the feet of Bhakti Deva. So it may happen, and this is, it's common in impersonalists, but it could be true even of devotees, that one hears that one should not speak about others, and one should not speak about others. But some devotee may be speaking about others with reason. But you could mistakenly think that, oh, he's speaking about others. You know, he's guilty. So we really have to be careful about that too. And maybe inquire, you know, what reason are you discussing this? You know, there may be some reason, or there may not be. You could clarify it. In Sri Harinam Chintamani, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura discusses the first offense against the holy name, which is sadhu ninda, blaspheming devotees. And he discusses who is a devotee, who is a sadhu, sadhu ninda, who is a sadhu, who is a devotee, and who is not a devotee. Because to know what is sadhu ninda, you have to know who is a devotee, who's not a devotee. And sometimes someone who's not a devotee might be commonly accepted as a devotee. There are many popular figures in India who are accepted as devotees, as saintly persons, but who may not actually be so. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura says that one should avoid the association of people who engage in sadhu ninda. But if someone is speaking with reason about someone who's not a devotee, and if someone else thinks the person is a devotee and shouldn't be blasphemed, then that person should be avoided. I'll give an example to make it more clear. Srila Prabhupada had a friend named Dr. C.P. Patel, who would always accompany Srila Prabhupada on his morning walks. And Dr. Patel was a bit proud, but he was a medical doctor. He had studied in London, and back then it was quite rare, you know, that someone from India could study in London. But not only had he studied in London, but he had maintained his good principles, you know, as Vaishnav, no eating meat, you know, all the regulated principles he maintained. Anyway, he used to come every morning and walk with Srila Prabhupada. And they would discuss quite freely on many topics. If you get a chance to hear Srila Prabhupada's morning walks on Juhu Beach, you'll probably hear Srila Prabhupada and Dr. Patel. So one morning, Dr. Patel began to praise one of the so-called religious leaders of India. And Srila Prabhupada began to very decisively criticize that so-called spiritual leader. And somehow that really upset Dr. Patel, really upset him. And, you know, he began like criticizing Srila Prabhupada for criticizing the so-called spiritual leader. And Srila Prabhupada was saying, I'm not saying. Krishna's saying, Namam Dushkitina Mudha Papadyantena. If you don't surrender to Krishna, you come in these different categories. Dushkitina Miscreant, Mudha, Fool, Namam Dushkitina Mudha Papadyantena. Naradama, the lowest of mankind, Maya Parita Jnana, someone who's in Maya, whose knowledge has been stolen by Maya. He was saying, I'm not saying, Krishna is saying. So the argument became, huh? Anyway, the argument became very heated, and it was like, I think we should stop this. It's distracting at this stage. Just listen. So it was like, so they were actually shouting at each other. And Dr. Patel's friends, they were usually quite sort of submissive to him because he was their leader. But even they were like, they were telling him, you know, Swamiji has a heart condition, you shouldn't upset him so much. And so they were like, at one stage they were physically trying to like pull him away. But and it was like, in a boxing ring. It's like they're going at each other, the bell rings, the round is over, they keep going at each other. And the referee, you know, is trying to separate them and their own people from their corners, trying to drag them, they just keep. So that went on. And then Srila Prabhupada said, okay, now no more discussions. On the morning walks, we'll just read Krishna book. And for the first time in years, Dr. Patel didn't come to accompany Srila Prabhupada. And as Dr. Patel describes it, maybe 2 days later, very soon thereafter, Prabhupada was walking on one edge of the beach, and Dr. Patel was walking on the other. Maybe Prabhupada was closer to the ocean, Dr. Patel was closer to the land. And Dr. Patel said that he felt something in his heart just force him to go to Srila Prabhupada and bow at his lotus feet. And so he just helplessly went to Srila Prabhupada and he bowed down and he said, Prabhupada, I'm sorry, but I've been taught to respect all the accredited saints of India. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. And I have been taught to say who is a saint and who is not a saint. So sometimes the guru has to do that. He has to make things clear. But there's never any malice or ill intent. It's just for the sake of instruction and perhaps helping us to break false attachments to wrong types of people. So there's just one other little point, and I'll leave time for discussion. On another definition of Darya. There is another meaning applicable to the word Darya, and this is very important.